This is J.J. Dillon, the leader of the original Four Horsemen, and you're listening to Phil J. and that pain-in-the-ass, choppy-on-the-turnbuckle throwbacks.
What this network needs, this network gets. I promise you that.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the main event of the evening.
Broadcasting live from Shaolin, Staten Island, New York City.
Freak Show Central.
Where's that?
New York City.
It's the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast with Phil, Jay, and that pain in the ass, Choppy. On Rant EM Radio, proud member of the Shining Wizards Network and Dark Satellite Media.
Episode 356 of the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. It is May the 1st, 2020. I'm Phil. That's Jay. And look who it is. Look who's on camera.
Choppy.
Look who's on the fucking gimmick. Look who's on
the gimmick. On the gimmicks.
Someone's on the gimmicks. Oh, boy.
That is... If everybody knows what we went through to get this going,
Jesus Christ on a cracker!
Oh boy, man,
Choppy's a pain in the ass.
You talk about three tech unsavvy guys.
Speak for yourself. You're still on PlayStation 3. I'm on PlayStation 4, motherfucker.
What's up, Rob Domingo?
That's too funny. That is too funny.
So, yeah, we finally did it. We got the video going. It ain't, I don't know. I hope everybody likes it. If not, go fuck yourself. I want me to tell you. I don't give a shit at this point.
I feel like I look good in this. That's all that matters. At the end of the day, this looks good.
Let's break the fourth wall. Jay's all happy because Jay's happy because he can't see the fucking gray in his beard. What's up, Shaylin?
You got that Just for Men stuff going
on.
That's
it's going to be May.
Oh, it is May. That's right.
It's gonna be May. Yeah, we're looking good. So yeah, we're doing the whole Zoom gimmick, which means we're definitely need some Patreon help because Daddy's paying for too much shit right now.
Yeah.
So, how's everybody doing, boys?
Very well.
Yeah.
Very good.
Everybody's good.
Very well.
Enjoying your quarantine, Choppy?
Oh yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know. Playing some Pokemon, finishing that up, and then I'm going to go to Marvel Ultimate Alliance and then work my way up from there.
Well, when you get to Ultimate Alliance, hit me up.
You got it.
Choppy right now sounds like it's like a 13-year-old's dream. Like, oh, yeah, I'm working on this, going up.
And then I got Final Fantasy VII, the remake for
PS4.
I can't play it now. I still have to play the other stuff that I got for Christmas. So there you go.
Yeah.
Kid Newman said, fuck Choppy.
Oh! I love it. Tell him to go eat a bag of fried dicks.
There you go. Uptown Jody said, looking good. What's going on? How's everybody doing?
It was funny. My buddy Andrew, he was just playing it the other day. We were playing it together. Well, I didn't play. I was just watching him play. I was just drinking while he played.
Gotcha.
Oh, boy. Anyway, so what's current events? Numbers are down, people dying. Numbers are down of infection. Still a lot of fucking, a whole lot of infection going on, though. They just officially closed down the schools here in New York City for the rest of the year.
Good.
Yeah.
They also are going to have a plan, allegedly, by the 15th of this month. to implement a game plan to open up the city back systematically. So I'm assuming it'll be like in phases. Like phase one will probably be like all the government buildings and all the important stuff, and then phase two will be like all the businesses, and then phase three will be like all the parks and fucking sporting venues and shit like that. So That's the rumor around the way. We had about 500 ambulances coming from all over the country. A couple of them are wrestling fans. I want to thank all of those guys for coming in and helping us out. We're averaging like 77,000 calls a day, apparently.
Mm-hmm. Listen, all you first responders, man, you, Will, everyone included in New York City, you guys are doing a fantastic job. Keep doing what you're doing. We can't ask anything better, you know, more out of you guys, you know?
So apparently they can't hear you or Choppy.
Well, Scott can't, so fuck Scott. Who cares?
It was weird. When we did it before, it seemed like we had both audios going in, because I know it's going from Phil's side, so it's whatever the audio is, it should be working. Unless, are we muted? No, I'm not muted.
No, no one's muting you guys. I didn't mute you guys.
No, I didn't mute either.
Well, we're live on the Rant, by the way. Rant EM Radio, part of the Shining Wizard.
There we are.
Part of Dark Satellite Media. No one can hear you guys. I don't understand the fucking game. Uh-oh.
We're working these bugs out. we said it from the beginning. We're working these bugs out week by week.
I can hear from TuneIn, not Facebook.
Yeah, Rob said he can hear us on TuneIn, so I'm assuming if you go to the Rant website, you'll be able to hear us, but not on Facebook you can't hear us.
All right.
That's fine.
You know what I'm going to do? We're going to keep talking. We're going to keep recording talking. I'm going to stop and go into the settings again. Maybe it's the settings on Facebook.
Sounds good. All right.
So let's do that. Hold on one second.
Blah, 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 blah. So
stop streaming.
But it's funny because like I literally have like a home. I got this brand new mic now. This I don't even know what it is. So like I'm literally almost like I would almost consider myself a half-ass podcaster at this point. I've always been a half-ass podcaster.
Now my friend are looking very delicious right now on video.
That's all that matters at the end of the day. As long as I look good.
Yeah, exactly. Man, it's all that matters. That's all that matters. I don't understand why they don't fucking hear it. I'm just this is why we keep
it's like two steps forward, one step back. We'll figure it out.
All right there, Paul Abdul.
Oh, what was the cat's name? Oh, I used to know the cat's name. It wasn't Cool Cat. It was a DJ Cool Cat. Oh, god damn it. What was it? It was something stupid. DJ Cool Cat or something.
Yeah. DJ Cool Cat. Oh, whatever it was. I think it was still stupid.
Paula Abdul is hot. Okay.
She is
still hot. Yes.
She is? You think so? At 60? God bless her.
Absolutely. I used to say Susan Sarandon can always get it, but now Paula Abdul is slowly working her way into that Susan Sarandon role for me.
Oh, God. She's like that fine, tall glass of fucking Coke that you just don't have. That's the age of it.
Well, I haven't worked it out with Tay, but whereas if I ever meet Chili from TLC, I'm allowed to leave Taper for Chili. Okay. I've always had to think for her.
I thought Chili from TLC. She doesn't age, that girl.
Oh, she's beautiful. She's absolutely beautiful.
She's got to be 50 now. Got her.
And she's a huge wrestling fan. Too.
Is she really?
Yeah.
Look at that.
She's a huge wrestling fan.
Who would have thought?
Yeah, I had a shot.
So you have a shot at least.
I still don't listen to Usher because of what he did to her 15 years ago. I will
Is that
not
what
listen
it was?
To Usher. Yeah. I don't care. He could do it his way. I don't care.
What did Usher do to her? Did he give her the herpes?
I think he cheated on her or something. He might have gave her some kind of venereal disease. We don't know.
Ooh, look at him using the big words for I would have said VD.
Chuck, you can't even say it.
I just say VD. But I don't know if you guys heard, but did you know that you remember the game, the trilogy of playing? You remember playing Sega Genesis, obviously. Yeah. Day, right.
Yeah, of course.
Remember Streets of Rage?
Yeah.
They came out with Streets of Rage 4 today.
On computer or
on PC, on Steam, whatever you want to call it, on Xbox, PlayStation 4, Nintendo Switch. That game.
Hey now.
Visually looks fucking believable. They say it's better than Streets of Rage 2, which is by far the pinnacle of that series. So if you're into like beat the shit out of people kind of games, you'll love that game.
Streets of Rage, that was almost like you got to jog my memory. That was almost Double Dragon-esque, correct?
Yeah, it was like Double Dragon, Final Fight kind of scenario. That great games. Yeah. very fond memories of those games. That's why I have the reason I haven't bought the game yet is because I still have other games I have to work on. So it ain't happening.
Yeah.
By the way, what do you call it? I believe AEW is starting up a wrestling game as well.
Well, I think they paused it until 2021. That's what I thought I read. Yeah. I know they want to do it though, and I think it's going to be along the lines of WrestleMania 2000 and
I hope so.
Mercy. Yeah.
I hope so. From your mouth to God's ears, I hope you're right.
I'm almost positive. I don't know if THQ was still in business or what have you, but that was the last thing I remember hearing was that.
The engine that is used on those systems for those games is called the Aki engine or the AKI engine, whatever you want to call it. And for whatever reason, people say that WWF No Mercy is the best wrestling game ever made from what they say.
But correct me if I'm wrong. Didn't WCW, they were the first one to have it. It was WCW World Tour or something like that?
If I'm not mistaken, if you play the PlayStation 1, PlayStation 1 had it first. It was called WCW versus the World.
Yeah.
Which you had pretty much all NWO characters, most of the NWO characters. But then you go to N64, they had the WCW versus the World.
That was the one I was thinking of, was the N64 version.
Yeah, which is World Tour, which is still a pretty good game. But the one game that kind of like perfected the system was WCW NWO Revenge.
Revenge, yeah.
That game is fantastic.
Like I said, I remember if I had 64 now, those games, those few 3-4 wrestling games, and then probably GoldenEye. GoldenEye is single-handedly the greatest video game I've ever played in my life.
I love GoldenEye. I really did. I just hate the fact that people get all these – I'm not good at getting headshots, and my friends used to fucking annihilate me with the headshots.
So. Wait, given headshots, you said? Given head? Is that what you said?
Sorry? What'd you say?
I said given D-bag? Head. Is that what you said?
No. No. So I remember there's another game that I've never played that's on the N64. It's another wrestling game. It's supposed to be better than than No Mercy. It's called Virtua Pro Wrestling.
Never played it. Yeah, never
it's
heard
basically
that.
Basically, all the roster from All Japan Pro Wrestling. So you have Misawa, Kawada, Vader's in there.
Really?
It's the same engine as No Mercy, except it's the roster from All Japan.
What? That's literally the first time I'm ever hearing it.
Look up Virtua Pro. I think it's Virtua Pro Wrestling 2. On YouTube, it is fucking amazing. It's just the only problem is that it's Japanese. That's it. Other than that,
yeah. Well, that might be. Well, listen, we can have a conversation after the show, but that'd be something to do for Patreon as well.
Mm-hmm. See,
I don't speak Japan.
Wow. Wow, you're a dick. Don't let Rob Domingo hear you say that.
He knows I don't speak Japanese. I don't speak Japan.
No, you don't speak Japanese, but you do speak Japan.
Some of my best friends are Japanese.
Are they now? What's Rob's up? Japanese, right? Oh, no, he's Filipino. Same shit.
He's Filipino.
Wow. All right.
I'm kidding.
Any of you fuckers watch wrestling this week? I know Jay did. You watch the wrestling, Choppy?
I only saw the throwback. I did not see any wrestling this week.
I seen AEW and NXT.
I did see Murder Hawk destroy Dustin Rhodes. Murder Hawk destroyed. I love Lance Archer. I'm sorry.
But I tell you one thing, to AEW's credit, they really did for a brief second I thought it was like, wow, we're gonna have a Dustin Rhodes, Cody Rhodes TNT match.
No.
But then I remembered seeing who was in. I'm like, nah. Lance Archer's winning.
You know what I was just thinking about? I actually wrote this on Twitter. How funny would it be? Think about this for a second. The TNT Championship is obviously the television championship for AEW, right? So how funny would it be that Lance Archer wins the television title of AEW, and it's the same title that Jake Roberts won in Georgia years ago? So it's kind of like, you know what? It'd be like his manager won the same title that he's about to win in the tournament. So I'm down for this, man. I really hope Lance Archer gets the title.
Yeah. I like I said, I mean, I think they're making us think that they're grooming it for Cody, which I wouldn't be upset with if they do give it to Cody, but Lance Archer is coming in with such steam right now, and he's just a fucking monster.
I love him. I love that guy. He's so good.
Yeah. Is it because he's not in that part of the world where he's not ringside with him, Jake Roberts? Is that probably the thing what's going on right now?
Well, it's funny because I believe, and somebody from the chat room could probably confirm, I think what they played last week and the prior weeks was stuff that they recorded. They pre-recorded this 2, 3, 4 weeks ago.
Oh, okay.
So I think Jake wasn't there, obviously, at the tapings. And if so, if they recorded this, you know, a month in advance or whatever, kudos to AEW because they wrote some great fucking TV the last 3, 4 weeks. And so I think that's the reason. But once Jake comes back, I think it's going to be even that much better with Lance Archer. Because once again, he was a decent promo in New Japan. I don't think he's nothing spectacular, but I think this is just going to add to him. Oh, he doesn't need to speak now with Jake.
No, he's got Jake the Snake. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, so, just,
my thing is this: do you think they're going to have a live crowd for Double or Nothing, or do you think it's just going to be an empty arena again?
Well, that was my next question because the ban was lifted on Florida today.
Correct.
So I don't, and I guess now. Full Sail and Jacksonville was at the Davis Arena, whatever the fuck it's called.
Yeah.
They can now officially have people. I'm going to say yeah, but I don't know if it'll be a full capacity. I don't know the rule. I don't know. I really don't know. I don't know the gimmick. I didn't read enough about it today.
I want to agree, Phil. I want to say it's going to be... They are going to have a crowd there, but I think they're going to try something different in the sense of maybe they'll have people that come together. All right, you three, you four came together. You sit here, and then they'll have X amount of people. So it's going to be nowhere near capacity, but I think they're going to try to get some live, at least some live energy in there.
I think that I have a feeling like there's going to be something going on where like, you're probably gonna, it's like what Jay said, maybe they're gonna have maybe 500 people show up, but you definitely need an audience at a wrestling show. The audience makes the show as well. It's not the performers. If you don't have that crowd reaction to complement the match, it's not gonna be that good, you know? I've been struggling to watch a lot of the wrestling, but it's impossible for me because it's just like what's going on?
It really is. It's hard for the company, albeit if it's AEW or WWE, to kind of set the hook in on us because there's no reaction, especially when they have gimmick matches like the ladder match, like from WrestleMania or whatever.
Yeah.
It's hard to fully invest per se, if that's the right word to say, but
yeah.
But once again, I mean, kudos got to go to both companies. I mean, listen, they are literally just trying stuff week by week. And like I said, if AEW is, if they're trying to write stuff and they recorded this about a month ago, they get a huge plus because it has been compelling television. And Jericho on commentary is fucking gold.
I was going to ask you guys, is he permanent now? Or like, what the fuck's going on with that?
No, they're probably doing that because a lot of guys, you know, Jim Ross is quarantined and so is Awful Excalibur, you know?
Yeah.
Okay, and Scavone and...
Scavone.
And Scavone and Jericho are based out of... I know Jericho's in Tampa. He lives in Tampa.
Yes.
So I guess Scavone lives not too far from there.
I think Tony was driving down, and like I said, same thing with Taz. Taz is, I think with the whole travel ban, I think they were all stuck there. So, and Jericho's been doing nothing but just fucking killing it every week.
Yeah, killing it for sure.
Yeah, I mean, even like he still does the old WCW shit where he like kind of like fucks people's names, their names on purpose. Like, who says Tony Scavone? Everyone knows Giovanni. It's so funny. I love it.
But it, like I said, it doesn't get old. It doesn't get old. And especially like Jericho, like he did a great thing where during a Cody Darby Allin match, he called out Xavier Woods by his real name, Austin Watson, saying how he beat Austin Watson in a you know, some kind of
amateur wrestling match in Georgia.
So it's pretty cool. So like Jericho definitely has his finger on the pulse. Look at that. We got to run in, Phil.
We got to run in.
What's that?
We got to run in.
Oh, hold on. I'm on the small screen. Hold on a second.
Oh, you missed it. Forget it. Delay. He pushed. He smacked me in the face.
Who?
He gave Choppy the hot punch.
Yes. It was Paws. Paws came in here and he just kind of like sneaked in there.
That's a good cat.
So, Phil, you said you seen NXT as well? Or?
No, I didn't get to see NXT. I was too busy messing with you, and then I got dinner, and then I stopped.
Yeah. Go ahead.
By the way, did you see the match with Punishment Crap Martinez, whatever his name is?
No, I have the results though. I have all the results. Did.
Dude, I seen it.
There was a scene. I saw the clip online. There was a clip where fucking Keith Lee from the fucking guardrail area, he press slams fucking Martinez from where he was at to the ring. That man is superhuman strong. There's no way.
Yeah. Excellent spot. Keith Lee literally gorilla presses him into like the apron. It was excellent. Listen, say what you want about Punishment Martinez, like he's bland or whatever. I'm starting to like the rivalry now between.
Don't do it.
I'm starting to get in.
Tell me you like Martinez.
I'm starting to get in on it.
The fucking archer of NXT, the archer of infamy. Fuck him.
It's bothering me that they can't hear you guys. I don't understand.
Oh, they can't hear?
Tell them to go to TuneIn and listen to us live.
Yeah, go to TuneIn.
And just have the video up.
Yeah, seriously, who cares?
Oh, that sucks.
All participants are unmuted, I guess. I mean, I don't understand. I have no idea.
It's got to be something with the audio in. I mean, you can hear us.
Right, and they can hear me, but they can't hear you guys.
Ooh. What was weird was when we went live before, we were able to hear it, but I didn't hear it. I didn't hear it through. I bet you it's something stupid. I bet you it's something with the streaming service. I bet you it's some kind of audio. We'll figure it out for next week. Tell them I'll comment right now. Tell them we got to go to.
Sorry, guys. I had to get the cat out of the room. He was trying to get out of. I closed the door and then he somehow, I don't know what happened. But anyways, I got him out. It's okay if they can hear us. I mean, it is what it is. We managed to get like the three of us at least. You know, we
managed to get video. Small baby steps.
All it is.
Tabor said Jay's using the most nonverbal communication, but I only hear Phil. I'm sorry, guys. I wish I could. I don't know. I wish.
Don't be sorry. Fuck him.
Jesus Christ. Oh man. But I guess the audio, you guys, if you put on rantemradio.com and click on the chat, like Choppy said. The audio feed is going on there too, so you can hear the silky sounds of Jay and Choppy as well. Again, we just figured this out like literally about 90 minutes ago, Jay and I.
Yeah, guys.
So we're still working this shit out. I mean, I'm sorry that
we're all... us some fucking slack.
You don't have to yell about it, Chop. Everybody sounds fine on TuneIn. Thank you. So you can look at us here, and then, you know, and this is cool too because we can actually, you know, we can take calls and add people on this, and it's pretty cool actually.
Do it live.
Fuck it. Put that cigarette out.
Put that cigarette out.
So nothing you can do. Whatever.
It is what it
we'll
is.
We'll figure it out by next week. I bet you. We'll do a little more tooling around. We'll get it.
Yeah, Georgie's got Georgie has the rant on the iPhone and on the iPad, and he's watching us on his phone. That's the way to do it, dog. That's the way to do it. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Thank you guys. Thank you guys for trying. We're trying just as much. Yes.
We're trying. It's like fucking working in bedrock. I feel like I'm working for Mr. Sleet. I'll park my dinosaur outside.
what a throwback.
I can go for a dino burger right now.
Ooh.
How about a brontosaurus steak?
How about a cockasaurus?
Hey!
Look at me. Look at you.
I forgot to ask you. Did you record that show with Louis yesterday?
I did. It's going to be going up on the rant in several hours, actually. I just ran the audio by Lou just to make sure he liked it, and he did. I'm going to send it off to AA after the show. And I might put it up on TermicalThrowbacks.com as well.
Cool.
And then you guys can listen to it. And then Monday we're going to be doing the Star Wars A Holiday, May the 4th.
Yeah, I've seen that.
And then later on in the month we're going to be doing the 48th anniversary of Empire Strikes Back. So
I'm gonna have you guys hate me right now. I'm going to make it an announcement. I've never seen any Star Wars.
What did you say?
Exactly.
Oh, no. You motherfucker. We're definitely having a conversation, goddammit.
Oh, Jesus.
What is wrong with this guy?
It's funny, my old man's a fan too, but what? I just never seen it as a kid.
Have no interest or
no, it wasn't on purpose either. It was just I never, you know, I guess I just never invested the time.
You know what, Chops?
Dead silence.
Chops, he's not the only one, dude. He's not the only one, you know.
Let me guess, Fallon's never seen it?
Yeah, her too.
Oh,
yeah.
No.
Yeah.
She's
up to Clone Wars. She's up to Clone Wars. We fixed her with Clone Wars.
Well, you want to know something? Have you ever seen The Lord of the Rings?
Yes.
I've seen the first one. That was it.
I've never seen any of them. There you go.
Yeah, I guess... I don't know. I've seen everything.
I've seen WrestleMania 8 like 15 times over.
Oh,
so.
We know about that.
Oh, look at you.
Is that your favorite Mania?
I'm very.
It is because it's one of the most fond memories I have. I still remember to this day the VHS tape I had. It was a Kodak. The yellow, remember the sticker you put on and you would write the name? It was a Kodak yellow.
Yes.
On the side. It was my mother wrote it, WrestleMania 8. And it was funny. She wrote it in Roman numerals too. And I remember Reba McEntire singing the national anthem.
Terrible.
And then Bobby Heenan always going, Ariba. It's one of those things where it's like, you know, we were saying it about WrestleMania 6, where it's like, it's just, it, WrestleMania 8 is just fully ingrained into my brain. Like, it's just, that's my go-to. So, yeah, I would venture to say it's my favorite.
I still think 21 is my favorite. I don't know why. I love it. I love 21 just because the first match was Ray and Eddie. Then you had Taker and Randy Orton, which is underrated WrestleMania.
Yeah.
Then my favorite WrestleMania match of all time is on that fucking card, which is Kurt Angle versus Shawn Michaels. That fucking match was insane.
Which they have a really good thing on the network, the Untold.
I saw it. I saw
two.
That.
Yeah.
Good shit.
That is really good shit.
Brio said, I love how we are in Jay's kitchen.
Love it.
I got the most important thing up there is my Bustelo. I got it during this whole time.
You drink that brown coffee? I didn't know that.
Fuck yeah, dude. I got are you kidding? I got Taba hooked on it. We went shopping like a week ago. She goes, holy shit. Look how much Bustelo they got. She goes, we need more coffee. I was like, yeah, let's do this. She got like, it was like 8 bricks or something.
You think Bustelo is strong? So during Sandy, I was working with my buddy Noel Duran. Really cool paramedic friend of mine. He's from Cuba, and he brought like the bootleg Cuban coffee. And I don't, you guys know I don't drink coffee. I drink fucking.
I know
this,
that.
This is my coffee, right? So I took. He had like a big giant steel thermos, and he said, "Come here, Primo, take some of this." I took about 3 ounces of this shit, and I was buzzing for like 6 hours after that. I got to drink about 40 ounces of Red Bull just to keep me up for the whole day. That shit, it made me regular for 2 days, and it fucking set me straight, man. I was scared. I don't know what it was. I said, "What's in that fucking? Did they solve the Cuban Missile Crisis with that shit?"
I was like, "Listen, Bustelo's way too strong, man. I can't have that shit. I mean,
oh no way,
it's way too fucking strong."
Completely disagree. I can have a whole pot of that myself.
I'm sure you could. I'm sure you could, buddy.
Oh yeah.
I'm sure you have 7 cups of coffee from fucking 7-Eleven every single day. So.
I have a steady diet. This is why. Knock on wood. I've been COVID free. I think I have a steady diet of coffee, water, and Bud Light at night. That's it. Nothing. As soon as the virus would enter the system, he goes, "Turn around, turn the fuck around. You got to get out of here."
Jay's making bootleg formaldehyde. He's slowly embalming himself so he doesn't catch anything.
You know what Jay? You know who Jay reminds me of? Have you ever seen the movie Supersize Me?
Yeah.
Yes.
He reminds me of that guy that eats a Big Mac every single day for the rest of his life, except it's Bustelo. Nothing but Bustelo every single day.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Tony Z's in the room. We got to give him a call after this to see how we can get audio on Facebook.
I don't know what the fuck, man. Leave me alone.
Yeah, what are you gonna do, man? Listen, shit happens. We'll figure it out.
Ridiculous.
Let's go back to NXT. I thought, what do you guys think about Candice LeRae and her new heel turn? I guess
I'm still not sold on Candice LeRae. I was never sold on her as a baby face.
Oh, no way.
Still not sold on her as a fucking heel. There's something about her I can't get with it. She's not a bad wrestler. She's really, really good. I'm not sold on her. And Johnny Gargano, I'm not into as well. I don't know what it is about Johnny. I just don't get into it. I can't get into the guy. But it's not their fault though. They're really good wrestlers. I'm just not into the couple.
You think it's just the heel persona, or
like the heel persona for Gargano does not fit. It does not. Gargano is the equivalent of Daniel Bryan. As in, he's like that lovable underdog babyface guy, you know? And that and to see him as a heel, it's weird. I don't like it. I just don't like it. And then Ciampa is a born fucking heel. He's a born heel. And to see him as a babyface, okay, I'm okay with it, but I prefer him as a heel. Just like how Phil prefers Kevin Owens as a heel, not a babyface, you know?
Same
so I'm okay. Again, I'm still not sold on the whole Candice LeRae project, but we'll see what happens. Maybe it'll work. Who knows?
I want to say I'm, you know, after the first week, I like the look. I think she looks good right now. It's obviously different. She's going with a darker, I guess, appearance per se. But I guess over time it can work. But she's just such a good baby face. That whole come from behind, you know, she's just the epitome of a baby face, and it's going to take some time. At least like her whole baby face that she had in Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, you know, that hasn't really flourished yet in NXT, at least in my opinion. Like she was a monster on the indies. So I think as of right now, you know, I think it might be too early, but I guess they're just trying. They're just throwing shit at the wall.
So
seeing what can happen.
Let me ask you: you think she's going to beat Charlotte for the title?
Well, I guess you got to see what they're going to do with Io Shirai. Obviously, it looks like they want to put Charlotte in the ring with everybody at a certain time. That's what at least that's what it looks like to me. So, can she? Yes, but then she would have to be the babyface because Charlotte is just coming in as a monster heel right now. So
I like Charlotte. I think I don't know if Charlotte's really a heel. I think she's more of a tweener right now. Like,
yeah,
she's fighting all these like she's fighting everybody, which is fine. I think it's great. She's got that Finn Balor aura to her right now, so it doesn't matter who she fights.
Yeah.
So she beat Mia Yim. She beat Rhea first. She beat Rhea Ripley. Then it's Mia Yim. I'm pretty sure she's going to beat Io Shirai. And then eventually, I think the end result is going to be her versus fucking Candice LeRae. At least I think so.
But I think that would be a little bit down the road. I mean, she did beat Mia Yim, but like she did, she didn't lose any steam, Mia Yim, if that makes sense. Like she looked great in that match. And, you know, she, to me, you know, I don't mind what they're doing right now with Charlotte. I hope, it comes in time where, you know, they do it for a reason. They build up somebody else, you know, albeit if it is a Candice LeRae down the road or even an Io Shirai, like, why not let it be her?
You know, it doesn't matter to me. It doesn't matter right now. I feel like the NXT women's division has been is really lacking in star power right now. I mean, they have Rhea, they have Charlotte, they have Io, and they have Candice. I think they really Charlotte's gonna have. She has a lot of work in trying to make everyone superstars in that roster right now. So let's see what happens. You never know.
Well, that was the big. That was the big question when I posted to you guys after she won. Like, who are they going to push now for her? Because, like Choppy said, the division's kind of weak, and all the good girls, allegedly good girls, got pushed up to the main rosters, right? So what do we do now? Like, I mean, obviously Charlotte's there for a reason. She has no – just to change the pace a little bit with the – I mean, because they got an abundance of women now up on the main rosters. So what do you do now? Do you basically, you know, who is the girl that's going to get the push for against Charlotte? Is it Mia Yim? Is it Candice LeRae? Is it fucking Shitlocka Shirai? Like, you know, who is it? You know, like, there's no clear-cut horse in the race right now. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Because I you know,
right.
It's not. I don't know. I'm not invested in the women's division right now. In
right,
NXT.
Right now there isn't one person. I think that's why NXT is going with instantly. She beats Mia Yim as soon as she's out in the Iowa. You know, Io Shirai comes out. I think that's why they're doing it. I think they're trying to gauge. Obviously some online reaction. So I don't hate what they're doing. I think they kind of played a hand too early with Mia Yim. They could have told a little bit more of a story per se. You know, they touched on it in the beginning when, you know, I think it was years ago, Mia Yim did a one time coming in and Charlotte beat her. You know, I forget what it was, a number of years ago or whatever. So they touched on it. They could have did a lot more with it, though. So, but
if that's the girl,
I think Mia's the next one.
I'm not mad at it. I'm just not interested. Does that make sense? Like, I'm not. I mean, if they have a history, fine. But I don't know, man. I don't know. I'm just not feeling it.
There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with
No. I'm just not feeling it. There's nothing wrong with it per se. I'm just not feeling it.
Yeah.
You know.
I think that I think Mia Yim is a future superstar, hands down. I think that Rhea Ripley is already a star, and I think she needs to move on to bigger and better things. She's been the NXT UK Women's Champion. She's been NXT Women's Champion. I think it's better off if she goes either to SmackDown or Raw as a heel. Not as a babyface, as a heel.
I think they kind of lost the boat a little bit with Bianca Belair going to Raw. Like I think they should have kept her in NXT for now.
I think Bianca Belair is another superstar waiting to happen. She's fucking amazing in that ring. She's really good. I think her and Charlotte are gonna have some amazing series of matches as well, you know? But now she's on Raw, and they're going to have to work on the roster they have right now. I feel like Mia Yim is a superstar waiting to happen. Candice LeRae could be another one. I think I'm not a fan of Dakota Kai, but she's another one that could be a superstar for that brand.
Was Bianca Belair pushed up too early?
I don't think she was pushed up too early, but I was kind of like upset about it because Charlotte's an amazing athlete, and so is Bianca Belair. And those two could have had some really killer matches on NXT, but we're going to have to wait for another time period for that to happen, you know?
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. Did you guys see the gimmick with Matt Riddle and Timothy Thatcher? I forget what they call it.
I forgot what it was called. I heard it was very hokey.
It was at first it was awesome, but man, it died a quick death.
I feel like Vince had a hand.
Right after.
I think Vince had a hand in that fucking skit.
Oh God.
I don't know. It looks like it has Riddle written all over it.
I don't know, man. I feel like Vince had his hand on that motherfucker because
it was at first I was all in, and then after like the second or third question, it's just like, you know, the Imperium could have came out then and it would have ended on a high note, but it kind of waited for it to stutter and get caught in the mud a little bit, and then they came in.
What makes you? How much do you want to bet that Timothy Thatcher is the one that orchestrates that whole beatdown from Imperium?
Oh, I like that.
And I'll tell you why. Because Timothy Thatcher, Walter, and Marcel Bartel were the original Imperium in Progress in the UK. So don't be surprised if Timothy Thatcher is the one who orchestrates the whole fucking deal and gets Imperium to win the tag team titles.
I do like that.
I'm telling you, Marcel Bartel, Fabian Eicher, those guys are fucking money, dude. I like those guys.
Good segment.
I didn't hate it, but it died a quick death.
What was that, Phil?
No, I'm sorry, I cut Jay off. I didn't mean to cut Jay off. Go ahead, finish.
That's all right. I said it was good at first. I was excited, but then it literally went off the cliff really quick.
That's what I heard. Laza, who was watching watched the NXT that segment, he fucking hated it. He was like, "What the hell is this on this? What the hell is this shit?" I was like, "What, the storyline or the skit?" He was like, "I hate this skit. It's stupid. It has no place on NXT." I was like, "I agree with you. I agree." So
that's fair. That's fair. Let's stick with Vince for a second. You brought up Vince before.
Yeah.
So we all read the. I actually posted the Dutch Mantel tweet that there was talks of the company being sold to ESPN and Fox respectively. Don't buy much into it, but there's been Kevin Dunn sold like a gazillion dollars worth of stock.
Yeah.
So either he's coming out to come out or he's just selling it to sell it. But that's a clear-cut sign of when someone sells that much stock, that's a clear-cut sign that there's a change in leadership in the company and or the company's being sold or closing. That's a typical business move when banks do it all the time. Like they'll, you know, the heads will sell stock and be like, all right, when they merge and do shit like that too. I'm not buying them. I'd be devastated, to be honest with you. I'm half in, half not. But I was waiting for today to get you guys' thoughts on that. So.
I would, once again, not an expert, nowhere near it. But I would venture to say that I don't think I would put too much weight in Kevin Dunn selling a lot of his stock. It was like $1.5 million, which I think, you know, obviously is a shit ton of money.
Those guys don't make a ton of money. They make good livings, but they're not.
I think he has more stock than that. I think if there was some kind of stuff coming down the pipe where it was going to be either sell him to Disney, which I've always said they're selling to Disney or something, but I don't think it's going to be anytime soon, or selling to ESPN, which is, you know, whatever the rumor may be. I think what would happen is he's going to get hit with some sort of insider trading type stuff. I, once again, don't know how that stuff goes. Honestly, I don't want to see the McMahons lose control of it yet. I don't think the old man's going to be willing to give it up just yet. But then again, you look at it financially, you know, there may not be any better time than right now. He took a huge hit with the XFL going down. So I'm kind of in the middle of that. It's hard to gauge. I think his pride is going to step in and go, I ain't fucking selling. But in the same sense, he's 74, 75 years old. What else can he do, you know?
I think that him, first off, Dutch Mantel is a pretty good, reliable source. He doesn't bullshit anybody.
Yeah.
So don't be shocked if this turns out to be a legit deal.
Well, that's why I posted it, because of Dutch.
Yeah. First off, ESPN and Fox is owned by Disney. That's first off right there.
Well, that's true.
Also, if the mouse were to have its hand in wrestling, do you think it would be better in the hands of Disney? Or do you think, like, hey, we need Vince McMahon, or do we need to just have Vince McMahon step down and have Triple H just control everything?
Well, that was my next question, and I'll answer it first. At this point, the mouse will own my entire existence. You know, extracurricular.
Yeah, exactly.
Seriously, wrestling, Marvel, yeah. Star Wars, the fucking Muppets. But anyway, I don't know. If you sell it, like what Lucas did, what George Lucas did to Star Wars, like if you sell the company but you're still like a consultant and you have some kind of creative control of what goes on with the characters in the business, then I have no problem with it. If you're going to give it to the mouse and then have the mouse run it with no experience, like a la Jim Herd, WCW, then I'm like, all right, okay, shenanigans. But, like, you keep Triple H in charge of NXT and some other, you keep Stephanie in charge of the main shit, you keep Triple H involved in NXT and all the other nonsense, the global stuff. It's a win-win. You bring Shane back in the fold. You let him run the company a little bit too here and there. They get to hire their own people. They get to hire their own production people. They can bring in whoever they want at this point. Vince is 70, early 70s, like Jay said. It's got to come to a point where you either shit or get off the pot, also like what Jay just said. Then you have to understand too, like, With the financial investment that they made in Fox, you know, is this lucrative for them? Can they build a better brand with both brands on TV if they sell to ESPN? You know, we don't know. I don't know how great ESPN is outside of sports. They do good documentaries, you know. How are they doing? I mean, they produce live sporting events. How bad can it be? If you retain the same people and just have them own it, I'm not opposed.
I think that if this will work, only it's like what you just said, Phil, is if Triple H does a creative and if Vince steps down completely, because Vince has lost touch with what the fan wants. You know, he's so adamant in trying to get the casual fan that he forgets that, you know, you still have your loyal fan base that you have to, have to please.
Well, more importantly, Chop, he basically just took the sport out of it and spent, a bulk of time making it entertainment, like
I'm gonna say in Vince's defense, he did take the sport out of it 30 years ago though. When he claimed to New Jersey, he's like, hey, by the way, this is all orchestrated. You know, so like, this isn't really nothing too new.
It's not new, but now it's 30 years later, and yeah, and now you're insulting the intelligence of the hardcore fan.
Correct.
Okay. Yes. So now it's, I don't care about the casual fan anymore. I'm over it. Either you watch it or you don't watch it. I give a shit. But the hardcore fan wants more storyline, better storylines. They want more realism. They want more, I mean, because the talent's there. They haven't had this much talent in their existence. There's so much. Even the mid-card guys can main event. Like, this is how good their talent is. So now, why waste it on entertainment? You already have the characters in place. You already have the talent in place. You put them both together, let them mesh, and then you put out good content. I don't know why they're trying to reinvent the wheel. It's not, you know, again, we've been complaining about this for about a half a decade already. But, like, it's not going to change, you know?
Well, it's not going to change in the sense of all, and I think you know, you guys would agree, like, all he needs is just one thing to get him back into it. Now, I think this one thing could be the idea of the competition, which it's probably not much of a competition in like perspective, but the idea of AEW coming in and still doing shows, which, you know, Vince wants to be the only guy, the only game in town. He wants to be he's the Barnum and Bailey. He's the only circus. The idea that Ringling Brothers is coming, I don't know. Oh, no, Ringling Brothers is Barnum and Bailey, but you know what I'm saying. Like, whatever the other fucking circus that comes around.
Soul Circus.
Yeah. Oh, look at here. Look at here.
Whatever the other circus is.
Universal Circus. Look at here.
But Vince wants to be the only one. And I think in time, I think if once again, agreeing with Phil, if let's just say Mickey Mouse does buy WWE, there's no way the Mouse is running it. He's keeping the infrastructure. He's keeping the Stephanie McMahons, the Triple H, and whoever. Everybody will be safe at in that juncture. But what's gonna be is the corporate side of it is gonna be run by Disney, which not exactly the worst thing in the world either, as well.
I agree with we're all in agreement, yeah. Is that it's going to work as long as they keep the main guys, but it will only work better if Vince retires. He needs to go.
I'm not fully on board with that.
He needs to go.
I think he needs to loosen his own reins a little bit, personally, and let Triple H, and maybe I think he needs to let the talent have a little bit. Listen, how many Rodgers do they have? How many people did they let go in the last few weeks, by the way?
I would say if you include agents, wrestlers, and corporate staff, it's about 200 people.
You know, and they can cut about half of their writing staff and let the wrestlers dictate their characters. I'm not saying dictate their booking, because you have producers and you have Vince ultimately making the decisions anyway. You don't need writers at that point. Have the wrestlers dictate their character. Hey, this is what works for me right now. Right now on SmackDown, they got Otis against Dolph for the qualifying match for Money in the Bank. This is quite honestly one of the best storylines that they've had in the last couple weeks, in the last couple months at least. It's at least it grips you, it's relatable, it's entertaining, and also at the end of the day, Otis got the girl. It took a while to get there, but Otis got the girl. It tells a great story, and it's fucking entertaining. And Dolph's a great worker. He's given the rub to Otis, who Otis is going to be. I mean, you know, I think he's got a little bit of a ceiling. I think he can kind of push his way around. But at the end of the day, like, this is a good storyline that they have. But what else can you say about SmackDown? Really not much after that.
No, you're right. I mean, like, Baron Corbin isn't doing shit. He's not piquing my interest anymore.
Yeah.
Who else? Bobby Roode, I believe, was on SmackDown. He hasn't done shit.
Hasn't done anything.
Sami Zayn is the Intercontinental Champion. Nothing coming out of him either. I mean,
and that's what I'm saying. Like, I think if Vince, you know, obviously every wrestler is going to say, "Hey, I got to be the top guy," but I think if you all work together for a common goal. I mean, you know,
a la the Attitude Era, because the Attitude Era, everyone was working together.
Everybody was working together. Like, the Godfather wasn't going in going, hey, listen, I got to be a top guy. He's like, oh, what do you need me to do? All right, I'm going to do my job at, you know, the best to my, because and every segment hit the mark. So I think they can get back to that, but they have to, they need more spontaneity or something, you know, they need something. And I think right as of right now, for the internet fans, you know, a la us, whatever, like, AEW has captured that a little bit, you know, and at least the last few weeks, even though it's been taped or whatever, but like, it's been continuity has been endless in AEW.
Well, there you go.
There you go.
And I just, you know, if they sell, like I said, if they sell, as long as they keep people in place. You know, yeah, what I'm saying? Like,
I agree.
It's not like a sports franchise where you can buy the team and then you hire other people to draft new players and new coaches and stuff like that. And you're like, oh, it's a different vibe. You know,
well, and that's the other thing, too, about like the layoffs or whatever and the releases or whatever. Like, it's not a forever thing. I think, you know, I looked at it from both sides of the argument where it's just like, all right, you're letting the people that maybe you aren't using and maybe don't want to be there per se, excuse me, you're letting them go off into pasture and see what happens. But on the other side of it, it's like, well, they can still have a job. Like, you know, if all this stuff ends tomorrow, next week, whatever, like, they're still going to be welcome back, you know. And but in the same sense, like, you didn't have to let 250 guys go if you didn't give Goldberg a huge fucking payday in February.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I look at it from both sides of the argument where, like, you could have saved that much money and kept a fucking Drake Maverick who clearly wants to be there, or Heath Slater who's been there forever, you know, Zack Ryder, you know. But it's also in the same sense, it's good that these guys leave because let's see them make their own bones on their own. Like, I kind of can't wait to see these guys hit the indies and see what happens.
I can't wait to see EC3 join AEW because I have a feeling that's where he's going.
I can't.
He's going to be money there, man.
Listen, I understand what you're saying, and I'm not advocating for Goldberg by any means, never, but I don't know if that Goldberg money was the reason why all these motherfuckers got cut.
Oh, no.
These
I'm
motherfuckers
not saying...
got cut because, A, they do this after WrestleMania anyway every year, and you know that. And, B,
yeah. They
ain't making any money right now, man. You're wrestling in your you're wrestling in your gym in front of cameras.
But,
you're not making any revenue right now.
I think I could speak for Choppy with saying it as well. It's like, you could sit there and claim, you know, I'm not going to say money woes. I don't know if that's the right word, but... You could sit there and say all this stuff like, we're not generating money. But once again, if you didn't pay Goldberg a $1.5 or $2 million to wrestle for fucking 3 minutes and beat Bray Wyatt, who was fucking over as the champion, you wouldn't be in that same situation. I think that has merit.
I understand what you're saying, and it does have merit. But I'm saying from a business aspect, if you have a business that's not making any money, why would you retain people who aren't doing anything in your company?
Right. 100%
okay?
Right.
Wait. You mean to tell me that Primo and Epico weren't making money for the company?
No. Neither was Drake Maverick. Neither was Curt Hawkins and fucking Zack Ryder.
But you have to then if you're saying it like that, yes, they weren't making money. But in the same sense, they also weren't given a fair shake. Because you cannot say that Zack Ryder and Curt Hawkins were over.
On the internet, they had their own little. Yeah. They had their toy podcast and all this other shit. But yeah, they're over. But again, it's long term commitment. When you get it, when you get a character and you invest in a character, it's a long term commitment. Goldberg gets the short term commitment because Goldberg put the 25 years in. Whether you like him or not, you're wrong.
Whoa.
Hold on. It doesn't matter how good he is. He was a name. He was a name.
25-year commitment.
He was a name 20 years ago.
He was a name in 1998.
Correct. And people in Saudi Arabia still like him.
Yeah.
Listen,
and all over the world.
Forget the brown people. Forget those brown people. Okay. Listen. Forget about that. Listen, Goldberg was a name in 1998. Maybe he was a name in 2003, 2004.
He was.
Maybe.
He was.
Now you're going to tell me that the man has 25 years of experience over a guy?
No, I'm not talking about experience. I'm not talking about experience. I'm talking about longevity. I'm talking about – it's the same thing in music, dude.
You're talking about marquee names.
When your name is on the marquee, it's like Zack Ryder is not going to be on the marquee, dog.
Zack Ryder was on the marquee of WrestleMania, dog.
No, he wasn't. But Goldberg was. Not once.
Yeah.
He was – you know what I'm saying? Like – That's the thing.
But once again, you have to say it, and that definitely holds water. But like you said, in the same sense, it just shows you, I don't know. I guess that's right in a sense. It shows you just short term thinking, because you can invest time in a character like a Zack Ryder, or even use EC3. EC3 is the perfect example.
Correct.
He was underutilized talent, bro. Underutilized.
He was used perfectly in NXT. Wasn't, and he was just on the ascent. He wasn't on his way down on the roller coaster. He was still climbing up. He could have did a lot more in NXT. And I would even say the same thing about Bobby Roode. Bobby Roode got called up to Raw and SmackDown far too early as well. But you let a guy like EC3 go, which obviously. It was better for both parties because he didn't want to be there. WWE isn't using him. There's no reason for him to be there. I 100% agree with that. I'm just saying, if you're trying to make room for the books or what have you, you could have saved that. You could have saved yourself a boatload of money from February. That's the argument, and storyline as well. Not even talking storyline purposes.
I'm sorry. At this point, it's so bad that I'm looking at it as a business aspect. If it was more entertaining to me, then I wouldn't be playing devil's advocate with you.
I see what you're saying.
Okay,
that makes sense.
You have to. I'm treating it as a business because right now it's that whole Cole Cabana thing. Creative has nothing for you.
Yeah.
And they don't have competent people to write some of these people in. But you can write Goldberg in because he's on a marquee. The brown people like him. The purple people like him. The green people like him. Everybody outside of the United States, global. It's like soccer. Soccer is global, but not in the United States. Okay? When soccer teams travel and play friendlies all over the place, it's like, oh, my God, here comes fucking... fucking blah blah blah. Here comes fucking, you know what I'm saying? But Choppy will tell you. He'll tell you, dude. Who's the Portuguese guy? What's the fuck his name?
You mean the gypsy? The gypsy's name is Cristiano Ronaldo.
If Ronaldo does a tour in fucking Israel, every Jew fucking soccer fan is gonna show up. If you go to fucking South America. All the South American fans are going to show up because he's a marquee name. You're not going to put Zack Ryder against The Undertaker in Saudi Arabia in front of 80,000 fucking... You would.
You almost had Undertaker against Rusev in Saudi Arabia.
You did.
And how bad would it have been?
It would have been great.
Great for us.
No, it did happen.
No. When?
It did happen in Saudi Arabia, Undertaker against Rusev.
Yeah, when? In a dark match?
The first one.
I don't know.
I'm almost positive it did.
I gotta research this.
You gotta look at.
I'm almost positive it did.
Go ahead, look it up. You gotta look at it as a business. You do.
I agree, and I'm looking at it with my business hat on.
I can see that business hat. Look a fucking roadie for the Grateful Dead.
So Jay was right. The match happened at the greatest Royal Rumble. It was a casket match between Rusev and Undertaker.
Ugh.
Shut your trap.
Was that the main
Shut
event?
Trap,
was that the main event?
No, of course not.
It wasn't the main event, but it was the event.
Thank you, drive through.
Of course not.
Case closed. Again, business moves. Guys got to go. It happens in business all the time. Corporate sucks. Politics prevent accountability. All these guys, I pray for them. I want them to be successful. I want them to have jobs. Even Pat Buck, who I can't stand.
And they will.
I hope he makes money for his family. You know, I hope the good brothers go back to fucking Japan in 70-something days.
Oh, they're going to kill it.
I want EC3 to smack MJF in the face or team up with him, either way. And I want the Revival to dominate everywhere they go. I want them to, I want them to, because, and at the end of the day, what's so funny?
Tony C just messaged me.
Oh, no.
God.
He says, and I quote, tell Phil that nobody was paying to see Oldberg anyways, so who cares?
Right. We weren't, but the Arabs were. But the Arabs were. They were. Listen, dude. Listen, it's like Castro with baseball. If Castro wanted teams, he bought them. If he wanted the Yankees to come to Cuba for a fucking tour, he'd call Steinbrenner. He'd say, yo, I want the team. He'd call the Cubs. He'd call anybody he wanted. That's what they do. If you have money, that's why they call it A-Rab money. Rappers talk about it all the time.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, isn't there a rumor that they were looking for Yokozuna to come down as well? So, like, what the fuck do they know down there as well?
Oh, here we go. Yeah, Tony C. Bullshit, Phil. Oldberg had one run 22 years ago. Yeah, one run.
Thank you.
With undefeated.
Thank you.
Yeah, he was undefeated.
Thank you.
Yeah, he was undefeated for one run. I'm not a big fan. Yeah, I'm not a big fan of Goldberg. I'm just saying he's a name. It's honestly, it is a name.
But it's. I'm just saying, money. You could have spent your money a lot better. I think is the argument.
That money was spent a long time ago, dog.
Yeah.
By the way, speaking of money well spent, how much money do you think Velveteen Dream is going to have to pay his lawyers to cover up his
not for nothing, but
his pedophilia?
We haven't heard anything about it since. I think it's
BS.
It may have been squashed. Not BS. I don't know. Well, maybe it was used without his saying or whatever. Like maybe somebody's acting like him. But you know, it's all of a sudden been quiet ever since it went down.
I'm telling you, man, that motherfucker was talking to a bunch of high school girls. Man, that's not cool.
No, it's not.
It's definitely not cool. And like I said, I hope it's a huge misunderstanding, because otherwise you can kiss his career goodbye. He was on, they mentioned him on Wednesday, so they didn't give him the Benoit treatment yet.
He's very young too. He's only like 23 or 24 years old.
Yeah.
So for him to just do something so stupid as
Which, not for nothing, if you're 23, 24 years old, how many stupid things have you done at that age? So
he's Jay, what are you talking about, Jay? He's still doing them.
Why would you send a cock shot to a bunch of like girls? You knew that was going to come back and bite you in the ass eventually.
Literally. Maybe he wants to get bit in the ass.
Maybe he does.
Here's the thing. You know WWE has somebody, whether it be Mark Carano or whoever the fuck is on the inside, going, listen, motherfuckers, listen, you got to live your life, but just watch what you do. Don't post anything on the internet, because guess what? It happens. Like, look what happened with Law Sullivan. You know, like, people just find fucking random. Once you post something on the internet, guess what? It shows up.
It doesn't get deleted. I'm waiting for fucking choppy stuff to pop up from 10 years ago.
Ooh,
I'm waiting for it. I know he did something fucking shady.
Oh, I'm sure. Here we go.
I'm just saying. Anything else, gentlemen, before we go to break?
No, I think
it's gonna break now.
It's gonna break now.
I'm gonna delete my content off my computer.
I gotta delete my hard drive real quick.
You better delete that. Don't put no shit on the show computer, you fuck, you dirty bastard. All right, guys, listen, thank you for hanging out with us. I apologize. I can't, whatever, man. It is what it is.
We'll figure it out for next week.
But the audio is good on the rant on rantyamarito.com. Whoever's watching us on Facebook still, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hey, Phil.
Yeah.
So Tony C just said, tell Phil those dotheads don't know energy.
Oh, Christ.
Bit them in the ass.
Ring the bell. Listen, before we go, two things, man. First of all, happy birthday to Pastor Sadell. We love you.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir. Happy birthday.
And please, if you guys know Surfer, he's on a rant every Tuesday.
Oh, yeah.
Please pay your condolences. He lost his brother yesterday to the Rona. And Surf is a personal friend of ours, especially to me and Choppy. Mm-hmm. And he's been a staple of in our lives for several years now. He's a good dude. He's a wonderful friend. And we bust his balls all the time, and he takes it. Like, legitimately, he's a trooper. But right now, he's going to do some shit, and I want you guys to show him some love and pay your respects to him on the ramp. Even if you don't know him, just send him a message on the rant and pay your respects. Or even on our page, either way. So Surfer, I spoke to Surfer earlier this morning, and I told him we're thinking about him. So I'm giving him a shout-out on the show tonight. We'll take a quick break. We got a cool throwback for you tonight. We did a little bit of an audible. We'll explain it when we get back. And listen, keep it tight. Keep it locked. We're right back. Turnbuckle Throwbacks. Be right back.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Okay, let's give this a try. The Shining Wizards is a funny wrestling podcast. No. The Shining Wizards is an insightful wrestling podcast. How about this? The Shining Wizards is a great wrestling podcast that airs live Monday nights at 7 p.m. East on RantDMRadio.com and Rant Entertainment Media on the TuneIn app. Of course, it's available on all podcasting platforms. I think that covers it. To check us out, go over to ShiningWizards.com and get ready to join us for some wrestling talk and talk about wrestling.
I don't know. All those moments will be lost in time. Like tears in the rain.
In a world where Hollywood tries to tell you how to live while doing the exact opposite. Where fresh ideas are tossed away for a cash grab reboot. Where the media has become nothing but propaganda and freedom is traded for what they tell you is security and safety. There is Inconclusive Breakdown. Your weekly look at current events and entertainment with no political correct BS. Just news and uncensored opinions, everywhere you get podcasts. A proud member of the Shining Wizards Network.
Horns up, beautiful motherfuckers. Radioactive Metal is here on the Shining Wizards Network, and we want you to listen.
Every week, we cover the world of heavy metal and speak to your favorite bands.
We discuss new releases, concerts, controversies, and everything else that's related to heavy metal.
And occasionally, we even talk about pro wrestling.
Catch us live every Thursday night on PureRockRadio.net.
Listen to past episodes at RadioactiveMetal.org or at ShiningWizardsNetwork.com.
And remember, it's not metal unless it's radioactive metal.
Hey, this is Mike from the Midnight Jury. When you are done with this show, join my co-hosts Adam, Cal, Sydney, and I every Friday as we travel back to the last old-school generation of the 80s and 90s to review the best and worst in pop culture, horror, and occasionally pro wrestling on WLWstudios.com or the Midnight Jury feeds on iTunes, TuneIn Radio, or Player FM. Go back in time when it was all about VHS, arcades, and hanging out at the mall. And remember that every second Saturday of the month, we go live at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Rant EM Radio, which includes taking your calls. Once again, that's the Midnight Jury on iTunes, TuneIn Radio, Player FM, and our home, WLWstudios.com. We'll see you there.
This is Ed Zola listening to Phil J and that pain in the ass Choppy on the Turnbuckle Throwbacks. How you doing?
All right, we're back. No one's going to get that music tonight, unless you're a hardcore fan of this particular genre. All right, we're back. Turnbuckle Throwbacks.
Would it be...
I asked you guys,
Choppy wasn't crunching on something.
I know. I asked you guys to mute your mic so I wouldn't hear all the nonsense, and I didn't have my fucking headphones on. I heard you jerk offs laughing. Thanks for fucking the audio up. I really appreciate it. Good job.
I muted my mic.
No, you didn't, because I heard you laughing from my fucking bathroom. You fucking dildo.
All of a sudden I see Choppy lumbering in, and all of a sudden he just opens a bag of chips. Oh, that was awesome.
You guys ready?
Oh, it was so funny. Yeah, let's do it.
And now here is your throwback of the week, sponsored by the Shining Wizards Network and Rant EM Radio.
What are you eating, Chop?
I'm telling you.
Yeah, goldfish. All right. Of course you are.
Listen, I know I get pegged as the guy that always drinks on the show, but Choppy's got to get pegged for always.
I don't give a fuck what you eat. I just wanted you to mute your mics so I can play the fucking plugs so our friends can get proper fucking props. And you fucking dildos are fucking eating and laughing. I'm like, you motherfuckers, I heard you motherfuckers with no headphones on. Can we have a smidgen of professionalism for 3 minutes and 33 seconds of this fucking podcast? Can we do that?
Oh, that was so awesome.
Can we pay respect to our pals and plug them properly? No, we can't. Not even remotely we can't. Because we're jerk-offs.
Yeah, remotely.
We're remotely jerk-offs. And that's the name of the episode tonight, remotely jerk-offs.
Oh, that was so funny. God.
So we
way
do
to go, Chop.
Good job. Both yeah, fuck you too, man, Mr. Chuckles over here. So we do an audible tonight, and our video that we found online to watch the throwback got deleted, and none of us finished it. And it was really
I wanna kind of take a little blame for this, because the night before that when Choppy said it got taken down, I'm literally scouring the internet for anything All Japan related. So I think I don't know how the internet works.
Obviously.
I'm pretty sure I threw up a red flag somewhere. So I'll take a little blame for that.
All right. So we were going to do the 25th anniversary of All Japan Pro Wrestling. It was a really good card. The problem with All Japan Pro Wrestling is that they never put out like full length events. Seldomly that back then. It was, and if anything was put on video, it was for like promotional, or like they would play most of the card. They would highlight the card, sort of like what Jay picked out for the Crockett Cup, same kind of thing.
Yeah,
they had a weekly television show on Nippon TV, and that's how they chronologically put their shows out. I'm not a big historical buff on All Japan. I'm only going by what I did when we did tape trading in the 90s. So we took the main event of that night and decided, you know what? Let's start digging the crates, as they say in DJ world. Because after 8 years of doing this, there's certain things that we still haven't covered. Or we did cover, and now we want to see through somebody else's eyes, meaning you and Choppy, Jay and Choppy. And then I was like, you know what? I feel like we haven't done this. And we're going to start it here and probably do the rest of it for Patreon, because it's about 15 years of a rivalry. And I'm talking...
Which is crazy to think about. Like, if you really think about it, and even in professional wrestling standards, like, I mean, you know, the great rivalries, you say the Flair Steamboats, you say the, you know, the you know, Austin Rock. You know, you can even say Cena Orton for that matter. And Cena Orton lasted for a decent amount of time. But I had no idea about this rivalry that happened across, you know, in Japan and everything.
I made reference to it a few times.
Yeah.
Choppy was hip to it because of what he read and some of the stuff that he saw. And then I hipped him to the stuff I was seeing on videotapes as a kid when I first met him. I said, listen, if you're going to watch this, then watch that. And I was hipping him to that. And at that point, it was already 2013, and I was already knee-deep back in New Japan. And yeah. We neglected Old Japan, which is where everything came from. So we all know the history of Old Japan, New Japan, the split with Baba and Inoki. And, you know, Baba kept Old Japan, and Inoki went and started New Japan. And guys jumped back and forth. Same way they did WCW, WWE, same shit. Except it's a little bit different here. Booking was way different. Booking still is way different. You guys all know that. But we're going to be talking about Misawa against Kawada. And I can't stress to you, if you're a fan of the stiff, strong style, kick you in the face, like insanely fucking crazy, hardcore, they call it strong style. I don't know. I can't put any other words to it. If you like that kind of match, then you're gonna love this feud. You might love this match. We'll post a match tonight. Maybe one of you guys can post it on the group page while we're doing this, and the people can watch along. So now, you guys know Mitsuharu Misawa. He died in 2009. He was 46 years old. Tragically, he died. Misawa made his debut for All Japan on August of 81. He went from 84 to 90. He was the second Tiger Mask for New Japan. Following the death of Baba, Misawa inherited the position of All Japan president. And after being removed as a board of exec, he left All Japan in May of 2000. He went to form NOAH. He was involved with starting Pro Wrestling NOAH. In 06, Misawa founded and served as the chairman of the Global Professional Wrestling Alliance, GPWA. He was an 8-time world champion, having won the Triple Crown title 5 times, the GHC Heavyweight Championship 3 times, and additionally being the inaugural holder of the Ladder Championship. His impact is also recognized by critics. He was named Wrestler of the Year by Wrestling Observer on 3 different occasions, holding the record for most 5-star matches with 26. Probably regarded as one of the greatest wrestlers during the 90s, in my opinion, probably top 10, top 20 ever. He was, how tall was he? He had to be about 6 foot. He was 6'1". He was 260, and I said this to Choppy. He wasn't that big as Tiger Mask. Right, Choppy? Wasn't that big.
What? No, but you know, it's funny because Misawa was not a big muscular specimen that, you know, we will later see now in New Japan with a lot of the talent. Now everyone in All Japan and New Japan, they're very fit wrestlers. And not to say that Misawa was out of shape, but he was not a big muscular guy. And the stuff that he would do in the ring was just amazing. Amazing stuff. He would knock the fuck out of you, no problem.
Well, let's talk about his adversary in this feud for the next 15 years, starting in 1990s, whatever it was, which is Toshiaki Kawada.
Yep.
Now, Kawada, 82 to 2005, he was a high school amateur, very high-ranking high school amateur. He actually, in his senior year of national championship, he beat Keiichi Yamada, who's also Jushin Thunder Liger, in the finals, actually.
Yeah, which is hilarious.
Yeah. He made his pro debut on October 4th, 1982, for All Japan, competing against his future partner, Fuyuki. And Kawada was then sent to North America for a year in 85. He gained experience in Fred Bernard's Texas All-Star Wrestling, San Antonio. He went to Stu Hart in Calgary. He went in Montreal. He was billed as Kyo Kawada from Seoul, Korea, in Stampede for a very short time. And he left under rare circumstances, whatever.
May I interject?
You may.
And from what I was reading online is that they were saying that Baba sent him to North America in order to not so much train him, but I think test him, see how much. Because apparently when he was in North America, he wasn't making much money. And they were saying that it was almost like a test to see his character, to see if he can be a star type thing, if he can make it on his own. That was what everything I read led to that. It was almost like they were trying to see if he can do, you know, if he would be like the number one guy. Because at this point in the 80s, his number one guy was Jumbo Tsuruta and
Tenryu.
Oh, my God. I just lost his name in Tenryu. So they were trying. Obviously, Baba knew that he was trying to find somebody at this point. And at this point, he gave. We're talking about the late 80s. He gave the Tiger Mask. He bought the Tiger Mask gimmick from Inoki.
Yeah.
And gave it to Misawa, which I think kind of like leads into this a little bit, where I think Kawada felt a little slighted by that, if that makes sense.
Well,
you know, and
yeah. No, I think so. So before this all happens, he goes back to Japan and he joins his partner, his mentor, who is Tenryu, and they teamed with the Revolution Group under the name Footloose. Very, very popular tag team in the mid-80s. They held the Old Japan tag straps on 3 different occasions. They had rivalries with Takano and Nakano. And, of course, against Doug Furness and Dan Crawford, or Phil LaFon, whatever way you want. Yeah. The Can-Am Express, not the Can-Am Connection. Big difference. And then Revolution stablemate Asurahara expelled from Old Japan in 88 for gambling debts. Kawada teamed with Tenryu. In that year, in 88, one of the greatest tag team matches of all time. Look it up. I'm telling you, in the Real World Tag League, it was Tenryu and Kawada in the finals against fucking Stan Hansen and Terry Gordy. It's on the internet. Watch that. It's one of the best tag team matches ever on the planet. Okay?
Really?
Yeah. 6 foot, 240 pounds. Didn't look it because I thought Kawada looked fatter, but he wasn't.
By the way, I don't think Kawada was 6 feet. He looks like he's like 5'8" or 5'9", dude.
They bill him as 6'1", but I'm going to go with you, Chop. I think he's shorter than that.
Yeah.
So this rivalry started out kind of like on purpose, because they were involved in a tag team, if I'm not mistaken, right?
And they were attacked. Yeah,
they were a tag team, and then was it Kawada who won the title first by himself?
No,
it was Misawa won the title.
Well, they won the tag champs together.
That I knew they were tag team champions.
And then
they won the Real World Tag League too, I think.
Yes,
at that time,
and Kawada helped him help Misawa, quote unquote, throw down the Tiger Mask gimmick. Like Kawada's the one that unmasked him as Misawa, and then that's how he became, his own self. And but apparently, from everything that I read, and Phil, you sent that great link with from WrestlingSmarks.com. This professional rivalry, it went back all the way backstage. It wasn't even just in front of the camera; it was behind the camera as well. So that's what I think, to me, is what's the most enticing thing about this match, is that this is the first match of so many that they had together. But like it was brewing up for a long time, because I think Kawada felt he was a bigger star than Misawa was.
Makes sense. So this goes back to 91, where Misawa and Kawada beat Terry Gordy and Steve Williams, the Miracle Violence Connection.
Huge, huge win.
The first step to their army becoming the tag team champions. And like Jason.
Bill,
yes.
Doc and Gordy.
Doc and Gordy. Doc and Gordy.
So now, fast forward to a year later after all that, Misawa, after being unmasked, like Jay said, he gets beat. He beats Stan Hansen to become the Triple Crown heavyweight champion.
Huge.
And it was the beginning of the longest reign in history at that time. The record still stands. He had it for a year. I'm sorry.
Yeah, 2 years.
2 years, I'm sorry. The record lasted a decade. So to determine Misawa's first challenger, Kawada and Akira Tao pitted against each other at the Budokan. Misawa quietly watched from the back of the arena. Kawada submits Tao, and the two tag team partners will collide at All Japan's 20th anniversary on October 21st, 1992, which is where we are now.
Yeah.
So this is the match. It was October 21st, 1992. At the time, the world titles were gradually meaning less and less. All Japan's Triple Crown refused to be tarnished or devalued. Lord James Blears read the certificate for the three belts that held together would soon become the most prized and respected title in the game. And I could tell you, holding those three belts not once but twice,
yes,
was probably the highlight of my last 2 years besides seeing my godson being born. So it's like, yeah, for me, it was, you know, those belts, when you hold those belts and you're looking at them, like, from, you know, and I was talking about this with Rob, like, they're just beautiful. Like, you know, and I'm a belt mark to an extent. So is Choppy. So is Tony.
Choppy.
So, you know, when you look at them up close and, like, you could just tell, like, especially, like, you know, it's sort of like the Stanley Cup. Like, the Stanley Cup is, it's a pretty trophy. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's big. It's got the lineage on it. It's got the fucking, it's ginormous. You play your balls out for fucking over 100 games with the playoffs. I feel like when you win the Triple Crown, it's like it's a big deal. It's the three belts. It's the lineage, and I don't know, man. It's like I guess it'd be the equivalent of a Gaijin holding the NWA title. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, the 10 pounds of gold. I guess that's how Nick Aldis feels right now, you know?
Yeah.
I always found it amazing that the Triple Crown was always three belts for such a long period of time. And now, I don't know if you know this, but now the three belts have been dissolved now, and that was just one title.
Correct.
Yeah.
Right.
Which I don't know if you've seen the design of the current title, but it's a beautiful fucking title, man. It's a really beautiful belt.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I just don't know if it's as pretty as the Triple Crown, and I don't know. I don't know if it's going to be as prestigious unless Old Japan goes on. I'm sorry, Jay. Unless Old Japan goes on some sort of like amazing talent run, where the belt gets. Because I mean, listen, man. If you look at the lineage of that belt, It's like a who's who at the time in pro wrestling, you know, in Japan, some gaijin, not many. And it took a back seat for a long time because when Hansen and Brody stopped going over there and Williams and Gordy passed away, Crawford, LaFon don't go there no more. Johnny Ace ain't going there no more. When those gaijin left, they found it harder and harder to incorporates different stars from all over the world, and I guess all the big stars were in New Japan.
Yeah, and well, like I said, because it's funny because in the 90s, New Japan, you know, floundered, I guess would be the right word to say.
Yeah,
like they were doing well, but All Japan, especially the late 80s, early 90s to the mid 90s, All Japan was just on fire. I mean, because we were originally going to do the 98 show, they had like 50,000 people there. I think they sold, it was something about like they sold 35 to 40,000 tickets, but they had 50,000 people inside the Tokyo Dome.
Tokyo Dome holds, I think, 80,000, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah,
I have. I got the Tokyo Dome book, and if you read the cards, all the book is just it's books of it's pages and pages of chronologically documented matches. I'm telling you, it's just like every page you look at it, it's just like, oh my God, I can't believe this happened and I didn't see it.
Yeah.
I literally want to go on the internet right now and spend $200 on that DVD set and a bunch of other shit, because they have a 10 DVD volume of the Triple Crown title.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to say something about the Triple Crown title, which I think aesthetically, I think, and obviously I didn't know much about this until this week, but like aesthetically, it looks better to hold three titles, obviously, than holding one big title, albeit if it's the IWGP or the Big Gold or whatever. Like, if you're holding three titles and you don't know much about wrestling, you look at this guy, you go like, oh, that motherfucker's a badass. Like, he's holding three fucking belts. Remember, like, just in general.
Remember when Ultimo Dragon showed up with nine title belts on WCW TV?
Exactly my point. That's exactly my point. Like, you don't know who he is, but man, this guy is badass because he has three belts. And I think that was something that separated All Japan from everybody else. They were like, hey, listen, this is our main belt. We're going to keep the lineage alive of the PWL, the PWF, and the NWA, UN, and I forget the third belt now. It's escaping me, but you know, the lineage of the Triple Crown. We consolidated these belts for one reason, but this is what it was. And I never knew who that English guy was who always did the announcer for the All Japan show. But apparently, he was a wrestler from the 60s and 70s.
Yeah,
as well.
That's Lord James Blears.
I never knew his name, but like, yeah. I always remember him from seeing him from certain videos I would watch.
You guys know I'm not the handsomest of people, but when you put those belts on,
you feel good.
You feel like the greatest person in the room. And I was half in the bag. I was half in the bag the first time I held them.
Yeah.
And I just, like, I literally got emotional. Like, they're like, I don't know, man. You hold these belts, even if they're replicas, you're holding them and you're like, even Choppy said,
but you're
there. Choppy reminds me like at least once a month. You know, you held the Triple Crown Championship.
I'm like, yes,
did. I did. I did twice. I did twice. And you know what? It was it. I'm telling you, that picture. It's on the internet. I think it's on the Facha de Libre.
It is.
It was the highlight of the year, because I had just started going through all the process of the divorce and everything, and I was like, man, I can't believe I held the Triple Crown title.
Jay, can you also, let's not forget, you held the Triple Crown Championship. We went to go see G1 Supercard, and we saw fucking Muda. We saw Muda.
Bro, I interviewed Stan Hansen the same night I held the Triple Crown title.
Fuck yeah.
And I took a picture with him, and he was the nicest person on the planet. You know, I could see why, because he talked about it in length, his time there. I could see where the respect lies with All Japan Pro Wrestling. You know, when he says, you hear wrestlers say, I made an allegiance to Baba. I made an allegiance to Inoki. Like, guys didn't jump ship right away. It was a gradual thing. Like,
it took time,
yeah. Yeah, it was like, listen, man, they either waited till Baba died or they said they didn't get their money or something. But, like when Muda did it, it was a big deal. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's that old school. I'm not even just talking old school wrestling. I'm just talking old school human being
mentality.
Hey, I'm giving you my word. Hey, we don't have to sign any contracts, and you know, whatever the case may be. But like, I'm giving you my word. I'm not going to go anywhere else. And that's something that is admirable. Absolutely admirable, actually.
So, let's get into the match.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
And let's talk a little bit about the first match of, Because it goes from 92 to like 03, 05 or something like that.
It's unbelievable. And I have to say, we were spitballing about what to do. We called an audible really quick. And you know, we were talking about we all seen this match from 98. We've seen a 98 match, and Phil was talking about how the rivalry, and then it just piqued my interest. I'll speak for myself. It just piqued my interest about it, and I just go, all right, yeah, let's do a deep dive into this, because like this is something that's kind of lost from now, where you can kind of be invested in the storyline, and just, I'm not trying to foreshadow a little bit, but like seeing the next match in the series, like you can see. And I hope for the life of me, I hope that it might have been thought about by Misawa or Kawada, like, hey, we should do this. We should gradually bring this forward. But my common sense is hitting me and just going, these guys, it was just a happy accident. It was a Bob Ross, hey, we'll just put a little tree here. There's no such thing as an accident. Like we just create this, like, you know, and like, I think it was just something that happened, and it's just storytelling done right. And oh God, I thought you were gonna. I don't want to.
No, finish your point. Yeah.
But you know, I think it was just something that was just it wasn't meant to happen at first, but as somebody's seen it happen, they go, oh, we got to do this again, because I noticed something at the end of the match. I don't want to say anything. I wrote it in and everything, because I don't think it was meant to happen. But man, if they, because obviously we don't understand fucking Japanese, but if it's something that they caught, it makes perfect sense.
But those announcers are amazing, man. The emotion, brings
you right in.
Yeah, especially when the guy says elbow.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. All right, so you talk about happy accident. I'll piggyback on that for a second, because once Misawa was unmasked and he was forced to go on his own and with his new identity. Evolution is the word maybe you want to use, right? There clearly a line was drawn where I feel like Kawada wasn't getting the respect he was supposed to get. Right.
No, he had a little bit of a chip on his shoulder.
He did, because he was really good, and he was told he was good, and he was groomed by guys like fucking Tenryu and Tay.
Yeah.
So like, who are like gods over there? You know what I'm saying? You can add Saruta and Kobashi and then Muda and Liger, yes, later on down the line, right? The Mount Rushmore in Japanese wrestling is, I'm not that much of an expert to. You know, maybe by the end of the year I will be, though, because I'm going to be knee deep in fucking old Japan this whole rest of the summer. But with that being said, so Kawada, I feel, is the clear heel in this.
And I agree.
Not, and, right, Choppy? And not like he wanted to be the heel. It was like, you
I
know,
was just going
to
say that.
Right. Like, fuck you. I'm being slighted. Who's this fucking
I was
mook?
Just going to say that.
Like, who's this fucking
I was
mook?
Just going to say. Like that, like, he wasn't billed as the heel, but as the match goes on, you can slowly start seeing it. And that's what I'm saying. That's what I hope that they thought about it beforehand. It was just like, hey, listen, Misawa, because you can hear this crowd is behind Misawa. As soon
right.
as he comes out.
Right. The first 6 minutes of the fucking clip, right? The first 6 minutes of the clip, it's just the entrance music, the wrestlers. And the crowd is just buzzed for Misawa, buzzed, right? The opening fucking move, they lock, and then all of a sudden Kawada just drops him, Misawa, on his fucking head with a suplex. And you're like, yes. Ah! And then like Misawa rolls over like, whoa, like it's going to be that kind of party? Like,
oh, yes.
I'm going to stick my dick in the mashed potatoes? Is that how we're doing things
yes.
now? Okay. Misawa, I think, underestimates the not the wrestler of Kawada, but the spirit and like the drive. Because like, I'm the champ, okay. Now my old friend, wants a shot at me. Does he have it? And clearly, Kawada came to play. first 30 seconds of the match, drop you on it. Even the ref was like, if you pause it, the ref's like, do the hold and then pause it. The ref's like this. Looky here.
Saito suplex was insane, bro.
On his fucking head. And you're like, okay,
it was nasty.
That's how you start a match. Like, open yourself up and be like, all right, listen, and mark your territory like a wolf. Or like,
well, that's what I'm saying, and that's why I think it's a little bit more cerebral. I think it was a little bit, and that's why I want to say, I should say, that they really thought about it. Like, they really sat down and they say, listen, yo, we can make some money with this. Like, we can legitimately do this right. We can do this whole, this is the Omega Okada from in the 90s. Like, but this is how it was done. Right.
This is Triple H, like Shawn Michaels. You know,
yes,
you know,
and it was, like I said, it was like the same thing. It's just like Kawada's coming in, like Choppy said, he has a huge chip on his shoulder. Like, he looked at it as, and from everything I read, that he was slighted. He said, why do you put him underneath a fucking mask when you could have put it underneath me? I have a better body. I think, you know, he was always just felt like he could have been a better Tiger Mask, and whatever the case may be, like, it just showed in the ring that professional jealousy. Well, I don't even know if that's the right word.
Well, I love how Misawa gets up after he gets dropped on his head and like tries to throw a couple of moves, and like Kawada goes to engage, he's like, nah, and like backs up, and then Misawa backs up again and be like, oh, and he holds his head like, I just got my head wrung. What the fuck am I doing here?
Yeah.
You know? But Kawada, to his credit, I mean, nothing. Misawa was one of the greatest of all time, and take nothing away from Misawa. I'm just saying, like, Kawada, you felt like that heelish, you know?
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? And he would work on the body. And he's one of those old school guys too. Like, he's like an Arn Anderson type guy. He works on the fucking body. He drives his elbow into he'll work on the arm and drive his elbow in there. Like, that's some Tully Blanchard, Gino Hernandez type shit. You know, it's like Chris Adams does that.
Something, yes, where everything makes sense. There was not one. Fucking ounce of a bad movement in this match. Everything made sense because they would do a little bit of action and then they bring it back down. They would do a little bit more action. It's like a pendulum swinging. That's all it was. Yes. It was picking up momentum and then here comes the end. It was like I said, masterfully done. I think that's the perfect word to say it.
You want to talk about dropping people on, you know, Kawada dropping Misawa on people on his head. What about like Misawa almost dropping Kawada on his head with that tiger bomb?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh.
And then that tiger suplex. Oh my God, bro. I was like, holy shit.
And then you get 11 minutes, maybe 15 minutes in, and like there's this power struggle, right? Where Misawa's got both arms are locked and is digging his knee in his back. And Kawada's Kawada's trying to fight it, like, in these, and like the struggle is real, man. And it's like people are standing up, and you know the Japanese fans are very timid. They don't have emotion.
They don't have emotion.
Right. They clap, they cheer, you know, they chant. But,
well, that
you know,
was one thing that we said was amazing compared to New Japan, because we know New Japan as New Japan now, but like All Japan then. I mean, the crowd is going fucking bananas for even like a rest hold. Like when Misawa puts on the crossface on Kawada, like the crowd's going crazy, like hoping like, oh, this might be the end of the match. We're 8 minutes in, but this might be the end of the match. Like the crowd was literally on the edge of its seat, which was it's amazing to see how two guys, you know, can control the crowd like that. It's obviously something that's lost from today's wrestling per se, but like it's just amazing to see how that can happen.
But wouldn't you say that's to the credit of the star power of Kawada and Misawa, because those guys, they held the crowd in the palm of their hands even before they locked up.
It was, absolutely. But this is still for the most part. I mean, Kawada was, you know, established per se, but like, this was also his huge coming out party.
Yes.
I you know, and I hope I'm not speaking out of school with that, but like, you know, Misawa clearly is over. He gets over on Hanson. He gets the rub, but like now, like, you know, we know he's Tiger Mask, and so Misawa is a star, but he has to have a foil to his throne. He has to have somebody that comes after him, and it has to be Kawada. And I, like I said, to me, especially in 92, you know, after seeing the 98 match first, like, you could see it was a thing of beauty to see back to the beginning how, oh, this is why it was so good in the late 90s. Wow, it started fucking good.
Yeah, it started good because they told a good story. Now, you'll get a lot of hardcore wrestling fans who can't invest in this kind of match because of the slow, melodic, like, you know, it's almost like from the 60s and 70s, the half-hour headlocks, you know what I'm saying? Like,
Yeah.
But in a different way, it was more like the submission moves and the rubbing and the fucking squeezing and the tossing, almost like judo-ish. And then all of a sudden, like, you know, 15 minutes in, 16 minutes in, Misawa's like, yo, I got to step out.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
And like, this is not the heel, this is the face doing that. Yeah. Normally it's the heel throwing you off, like, you know, making you fuck with the mind games. And Quad is like, no, just come back in. I'm going to pound your face in again.
Yeah. You know?
And then I'm going to try.
Yeah. There was one thing in this match. I'm sorry to interrupt. Thing in this match that I know, especially Choppy being a video game mom. So once again, we were talking about WCW versus the World or Revenge. They had the Japanese style power bomb into the cradle pin.
Yes.
I had no idea that was Kawada's move.
What about that senton that Misawa did on Kawada at one point?
Massive.
That was like, that senton that he does is the exact mannerism that they use for the fucking video games and for WCW. And I'm like, they got it for this motherfucker. They got it from Misawa.
I wonder if they fucking lifted some of that shit.
They probably did. I loved the reverses. It wasn't just a regular reversal. It was like at one point, like 20 minutes in, right? Misawa goes to throw Kawada into the ropes, and Kawada fucking, as he reverses it, just decides to thrust kick him in the face.
Like,
it was almost like ballet. You know what I'm saying? Like, if he would have stepped, you know, he wanted to throw him, and then what would happen was Kawada would turn to reverse it. But as he's reversing it, he throws the fucking leg up, and like, you gotta have a skill for that. These dudes don't practice that shit in the ring like they do now. This ain't the performance center. You know what I'm saying? They don't do that. You know what I'm saying? That shit, that you can't practice that shit.
They might call it in the back, and you know, Kawada's like, all right, listen, Misi, I don't know what he calls him for short or whatever. But, you know, he goes, I'm going to throw you into ropes.
He's giving the guys nicknames. This fucking guy's giving him nicknames.
I don't know.
This fucking guy.
I don't fucking know.
Hey, Missy.
Do you call somebody Mr. Haru?
Oh, how about just call them by their names?
I mean, I'm pretty sure Misawa was going up against Stan Hansen. He was like, round eye.
Round eye. Hey, you blind fuck. You blind fat fuck. You know?
I'm the big white blob coming at you, all right?
Right, exactly.
You know, but like I said, it's the same thing. Like you said, the same thing to be said about the reversals. But the way that they would transfer into move for move, you know, Misawa will go for a pin, you know, kick out at two. Instantly, there was no break in between the action. He instantly just grabbed them up, picked them up for a body slam. You know, it was just the transfer in between moves. It made sense. It was almost like it seemed like a real competition. Like it's you know, and it's funny because it's professional wrestling, obviously, but it, like, to the untrained eye, like, you could, like, oh, these motherfuckers are going at it. Because you see those shots. Now, we haven't even talked about the chops.
Well,
the forearms,
kicks. Thank you. I was about to get into that. So, like, about 22 minutes in, 25 minutes in, a series of chops, serving up a large buffet of chops from Kawada to Misawa, right? And it's almost like Misawa is almost no selling it, but he's not. He gives you the reaction, that knee-jerk reaction of the of taking the chops, but he's getting like the Hulk Hogan breath to him. Yeah. And all of a sudden, he'll bounce off the rope and throw an elbow right in the dude's face. And then Kawada's like, you know what? Fuck you. I'm going to throw an elbow. And they're both they went from chops to bows, like legit throwing bows. And it was like, you felt like this was too, like, I don't know, like I was there. You know, that's
was one of those things, like you see it now in big, quote unquote, main event, big time matches, that spot where it's like, boot, all right, I hit the ropes now, I'm gonna hit you with a boot, you hit the ropes, you hit me with a elbow. But this was the origin of that. But this was more real. I there's no other word to really kind of say it. It was more real. It felt more real because Masao was getting hit. And next thing you know, he goes, fuck you. Now he hits him back. And then Kawada's like, oh, we're going here now. Let's do this.
And then he breaks out.
And then you also got to credit the announcers for getting you involved into the actual sequence.
Yeah.
Because – I mean, if you were to listen to an announcer here in the United States, they'd be like, oh, he's hitting him with an elbow. No, this motherfucker was like, elbow! And you're like, holy shit, the fuck's going on?
And
they were joking around.
And what about Misawa channeling his inner tiger mask, going to the top rope, and you're thinking, what, maybe a splash? No. I'm going to throw my elbows in your face and knock you on your face.
And the announcer was like, diving elbow? Like,
that was no diving elbow. That was a fucking flying double forearm to the fotch.
There was one moment too. Actually, I wrote down as well. Whereas there was one moment where Misawa was selling on the ground, Kawada's up, and then Kawada's literally just kicking him in the face, kick, and it was almost as an attempt to dare him to stand up and fight back. And just literally just does it, and then like he just looks at him, goes, "Oh, you want this?" And it's the same exact thing. He just fucking nails him with a fucking elbow again, and it turned out of nowhere. You know, stiff forearm shots, like Kawada's back, and then just hits him with a stiff fucking reverse enziguri, and then it's just a double down on the ground. The crowd is just literally eating this up at this point, and it's got to be like you said, 25 minutes into the match at this point.
Yeah. It's insane, just to the flow of the match. I mean, when you think about it realistically, there is no legitimate flow in terms of who had the upper hand more. It was just a back and forth thing, and I think that's where this is like the epitome of strong style. You know, this is where it's got, you know, you're gonna get everything in your face. There's nothing coated with sugar. There's no going to the crowd. There's no like getting like trying to rile anybody up, but your opponent. Like these guys were invested in the match totally, and I think that's why the rivalry was so good, because they were. I mean, obviously they knew each other; they were friends. And you know, when you're always friends, you know how the wrestling code is. When you're really friends with somebody in real life, you wind up working better together. You could tell these guys.
But that's what I was saying.
Yeah.
I'm questioning their friendship outside the ring. I think obviously they respected the shit out of each other. Otherwise they just sock each other in the face the whole time. I think they respected each other and respected the business, obviously. But like you can see in this match, and then like I said, doing a little foreshadowing for the next match, you can see the professional rivalry that these guys had, because there was nothing held back. Like they were just like, they were safe, but they were fucking stiff. Like, hey, and it was 30, I think it was like the match was 33 minutes or something like that. And just 33 minutes of, it wasn't, I don't know if pure action is the right word, but it was, you know, the storytelling or whatever, like, you know, it's just the way it started, everything, like I said, everything made sense. Like it was for me watching it, and I texted Phil. I was like, "Oh, I'm all in on this right now."
Oh yeah,
yeah. But you say 32 minutes in, Kawada throws the full Nelson.
Dragon suplex.
I'm sorry, it escaped me. He throws the dragon suplex, and you kind of thought that was he was done.
Yep.
Like, you didn't think he was going to kick out of that. Like, cause yeah. He was tired. Masao was tired. Kawada was, like, on rubber legs at this point. And he quickly made sure he had him gripped and then dropped him. And I was like, whoa! And then he kicked yep. out. And then he kicked out. So let's take the match home. Let's take the match home now.
So. All right. So I got, like I said, so now at this point, you know, Kawada's down on the ground. And he's doing a great job of selling. Like he would get in a shot, knock Misawa down, and he would sell up, but then he would fall back down. And you know, I wrote down as like all Kawada could do is fight from the ground and kick Misawa in the thigh a few times, but you could see he was out of desperation, which was just great storytelling. You know, Misawa runs to the ropes and hits another forearm of Kawada and goes for another tiger suplex and hits it for the pin. And this is about his third tiger suplex for the you know, just the double underhook from the back.
Correct.
Locks the arms. It was his third time hitting that move for the win. And but, I have to admit, if you see – oh, go ahead.
I don't know if you noticed, when he got the win, Kawada's feet were under the ropes.
I was just going to say the crowd went banana, but I was like, great placement of the suplex. It appeared that Kawada's foot was underneath the bottom rope. Looked like it grazed the plane, like almost like it was going out of bounds or something. And that's what I was saying. I was saying, for, you know, from the beginning, I'm almost positive that happened on accident. But, man, it that tells such a great story for the future. Because now, now Kawada as a heel now, because he's turning heel in this match. You could see it. The kicks to the face, the being disrespectful. He was turning heel. And that's a perfect way for Kawada to come back and go, hey, by the way, you didn't beat me. My foot was underneath the bottom rope. It's just it's a way to get your heat back automatically.
Well, I think he established himself as the heel the first 30 seconds of the match.
Yeah, yeah. Well, just drop, like you said, not even having respect for him, just dropping him on his head, like you said.
Yeah. I mean, clearly, I don't think anybody realized the longevity of this. I mean, how often does a feud go almost 20 years?
Yeah, it's insane. Literally.
Can you believe that? It's incredible.
I don't even think that'll ever happen again.
Not, I mean, how long did fucking Flair and Steamboat feud for? Not that long.
That was on and off, though. That was like a couple of months here, a couple of months there, and then in the territories, and then it came back in the 80s, the late 80s.
Well, Flair has always said that, I forget if I heard it on Conrad's podcast or Flair himself saying, he goes, oh, yeah, those three matches were good. But he goes, we've had 100 better matches that were never even televised.
He said that in his book, too.
Yeah. So, like, that's another one. Flair, Steamboat, you know. I mean, listen, you can even put Flair, Sting. That was a 10-year rivalry, you know, 10, yeah, 11-year rivalry.
Off and on.
That's fair.
Off and on. But the thing is, these guys went on continuously.
Yes.
Yeah. They were like, fuck it, we're going to keep going no matter what.
And then it integrated with other people. Kobashi.
Yes.
Kobashi.
Yes.
Kenta Kobashi.
Well, it goes into the tag matches now when they go into the World Tag League. And then Kawada's teaming with Tagu. What's his name?
Tenru.
The other cat. Tayu.
Tayu?
Tayu, yeah. Yeah. You know, when he's teaming with him, now all of a sudden now Kawada's super heel, you know, and he's being with him.
I like the fact they get trophies too. I think it's awesome.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, I agree. You know what I like too at the end of the match? As soon as the match is over, all the young boys hit the ring and it's like corner men. Like they're checking on Kawada, like holy shit, like you know, they're checking on Misawa, like it adds to the realism of, you know, or trying to play to the realism, I should say, trying to play to the realism of a professional wrestling, which is, you know, which is once again a lost art, where they're coming in with the ice packs and like, hey man, you had a great match, like, you know, this match went 30, I think it was like 30 cents, 36 minutes, 37
yeah,
minutes,
34,
like that.
I guess I can speak for all three of us. All three of us were emotionally invested in this match.
Yeah.
It was really good.
And this is coming from, we watched the 25th anniversary from 98 and we were like, wow. And we were all texting each other like, what a fucking match that was. And then we all of a sudden we got a wheels turn. We're just like, oh, we gotta chronicle this rivalry going forward, because this is something to, like you said, really sink your teeth in, and like you said, really get emotionally invested in it, because, and it doesn't, it takes some time to, for Kawada to get his feet underneath him, but you can see he's climbing out of the mud hole where he's, you know, he's so close, but then next thing you know, he just comes right back down. And yep. I liked about this match was, and you don't see it in a lot of matches now, and probably haven't seen it recently either, like a lot of matches, like, oh, they didn't do the same move twice. Like, oh, that's how you know it was a good match. No, fuck that. Like, these guys, like Misawa used the Tiger Suplex 3 times in this match. They used the back suplex 5 times.
Yeah, you know? Man.
Like, it was like, yo, this is a devastating move. Oh, I'm going to get him now. Like, with the same move. Like, I didn't mind seeing the same move a few times and different variations as well. Like, I like that aspect.
I'm not mad at it. I'll tell you what. Dude. I'm gonna. This is for all the young kids that listen to the show. I know you guys are all big into New Japan, us included. I've said this on occasion about 17 dozen times since 2013, that New Japan has been my favorite promotion since right after I started the podcast. But I started getting into Japanese wrestling when this happened with tape trading. You know, I started getting into this because of these guys, because of them, Kobashi, Gordy Williams, Stan Hansen, Bruiser Brody, Jumbo Tsuruta, was an amazing talent. Tsuruta, yes, was one of the best of all time. You had everything you want in wrestling without the entertainment, like the pyro and the fucking the over the top gimmicks. You had stables, you had tag teams, you had clear cut intentions of every guy in there, you know, and you know, these guys didn't look the part at all. Let's be honest. Misawa, you probably bought flowers. He looks like you bought flowers from him from somewhere, or he worked, or he worked in fucking Benihana and fucking on the West Side. You know, he looks like that kind of guy. He looks like a factory worker or
Kawada. He looked like the dad in Wayne's World. He looked like Tia Carrera's dad in Wayne's World.
Yeah. Oh. Kawada, and that's Misawa. And Kawada looks like he could fucking work in a Detroit fucking plant, the Ford plant, making Japanese cars for Daewoo, for Korean cars. But all jokes aside.
Yeah.
I can't put these guys over enough. They're two of my favorite wrestlers of all time. Kobashi's a little more of my favorite, but more than these two. But
yeah,
they're close second.
Well, like I said, that's
I mean, that was just on another level. And if it wasn't for these two guys, you wouldn't have a Kenta Kobashi. You wouldn't have a Okada or a Liger or a what's his face? The guy who came over here. My mind is fucking
Nakamura.
Nakamura, you wouldn't have.
Oh my god, you forgot about Nakamura.
Yeah, I'm sorry, man. It's been a rough couple of weeks. And you wouldn't have guys like that. You know, you wouldn't even have Minoru Suzuki. You know what I'm saying? You wouldn't have. You wouldn't have. And our favorite guy, Jin, wouldn't be as famous as they were if they didn't fight these guys. You know, you wouldn't have fucking any of those guys, man. You wouldn't have Ibushi or any of these kids, man. Of course, you wouldn't have Tanahashi. You know what I'm saying? Like, you wouldn't have any of these guys, you know?
Correct.
What's good, you know, at least for me, like, being a fan of, you know, I'm trying to word it correctly. Being a fan of professional wrestling, like you said, storytelling inside the ring. This was obviously taking place in Japan. We didn't need, you don't need, translator. You don't need subtitles on the bottom of the, you know, the match to get invested. You don't need the commentators. The commentators actually add to it, not speaking English, because emotions, they translate through. especially during the big moves and whatever. And like I said, the crowd getting into it or what have you. But like, you don't need the typical we have today. You just need two guys in the ring, a referee, and just continuous action from 30, for about 30 minutes, 40 minutes, whatever. But like, something that makes sense. And this is what made sense. These guys were fighting for a title. That's exactly what they were doing. There was nothing else happening. And even like, and there was something that I noticed too. And it was the I think it was like the only move that happened on the outside. Like, Misawa went for the suicide dive. Like, Kawada did such a great job of selling. Like, he was selling on the outside. He worked his way up. And the timing was just perfect. Like, Kawada wasn't standing there waiting to be dove on. Like, he just sold up at the right time as Misawa was coming out. Like, to me, like, that's a breath of fresh air. That's an absolute breath of fresh air to see it done right. I guess would be is where I'm going at.
My final thought is this. If you're a pure fan of pro wrestling, and I'm piggybacking on what Jay said, if you're a pure fan of pro wrestling and you don't want the stuff that brings it all together in terms of the entertainment value, the pyro and the gimmicks and all this other shit, if you like the sport of professional wrestling and you need to embrace some of the strong style, that's it. Bottom line.
Oh, yeah.
This is it. This is where it's at. You want to get, like, and it may not be your cup of coffee. I can't tell you how many amazing wrestling fans that I've known in my life, I've met, I've talked to, hardcore fans just like us, they can't watch the Strong Style or King's Road.
What?
They can't watch King's Road. They can't watch Strong Style. Yeah. Some fans can't connect because they want the glitz and the glamour with it. They want the rock and roll with it. They want like that persona shit. You know what I'm saying? I'm all about the fucking machismo. I'm all about like in your face, fuck you. I'm gonna slap your tits off, and then you try to slap my tits off, and then we'll see who goes and see who loses this shit first. And Misawa right. and Kawada clearly set the standard for the Strong Style. Clearly put the 90s and the 2000s on the map and set a precedent for the rest of the fucking decade and the decades ahead.
Well, that was one of the things I wrote on the bottom of my thing was, and I was going to actually ask you guys is, was this the first match to set the quote unquote main event standard, with the drama and the high spots for years to come, especially in Japan. But this is something that this was the start of that style. Drawn out.
You know who you can ask that to? You can ask
Japan.
You know who you can ask that to, Jay? You can ask Samoa Joe that. You can ask CM yeah. Punk that. You can
yes.
ask Daniel Bryan that. You can ask Nigel McGuinness that. You can.
And ask, what do you think the answer is going to be?
Right. You can ask Kenta that.
Yeah.
You could probably ask Tanahashi and all these other. You can ask Okada. You can ask Kenny Omega. You can ask any of those guys who were 30 and under, 35 and under, or just hitting 40 and under. Like, you ask those cats, and they're going to tell you, oh, Misawa, oh, Kawada,
yeah.
oh, Saruta,
yeah.
oh, Ricky Choshu, oh, Fukuyami,
yeah.
or fucking, Kintsugi Sasaki, or Great Muda, what's his face, the Mafia Kick, fucking, Masahiro Chono. Like,
yeah.
you know what I'm saying? Like, ask those, it's those dudes. Like, it set a precedent, man. And it happened in the States, too.
Yeah.
But those guys, yeah. but I'm talking about guys like Joe and Punk and Nigel and Daniel Bryan, those were like the new school guys that brought this shit in here. You know what I'm
yeah.
saying? So it's like.
Well, they take it, they mold, right. They see the piece of clay, they mold what they, it's like, oh, you know what, we can do this though now. Now we can add this.
Yeah.
And then you add the Tanahashi who's going, oh, I like what Samoa Joe and, Chris Hero and whoever, I like what they've done, but I could do this now.
Yeah,
and then
Chris
bring
Hero.
In Okada,
oh,
keep, and then keep, and just, and like I said, the, and that's what's beautiful is that the ball just is just going to keep rolling. And like, guys are going to keep getting inspired, and like it's and that's what's the beauty of the beauty of this podcast is like we can go back and kind of look at it with a new set of eyes. I don't know, or a recent set of eyes.
It's the same thing with the cruiserweights. You ask any cruiserweight or light heavyweight what the Super Juniors in the 90s did for those wrestlers. Especially the 94 tournament with Benoit and Tiger Mask and Jushin Thunder Liger. You can ask Ultimo Dragon that. You can ask Eddie Guerrero that. You can ask any of those cats. You can ask Dean Malenko. You can because who he wrestled there at that point. You can ask any of those guys how those guys transcended. Psychosis, Juventud, La Parca, you know, any of those guys, man. Any of those guys, so...
It's so influential in the fact of like if anybody asks me like hey Jay what's one of your favorite matches like now seeing this like I got no choice but to say Misawa Kawada because I was emotionally invested from the first match I seen and it was it arguably wasn't their best in 98 but that was like a great one and then once we kind of collectively came together it was like hey let's do a deep dive into this rivalry, which now look at it now, we're going on what 40 minutes. We're talking about one match. That shows you how much meat is on this bone.
Well, now try ranking 15 years of their matches.
Exactly.
That's going to take the rest of the year. So,
yeah,
I think we're done for tonight, fellas.
I think so too.
Yep.
I'm glad we did an audible. I'm glad I finally got to do this because this is one of my favorite rivalries.
Yeah.
And two of my favorite wrestlers of all time.
And can't wait to see where it goes.
Yeah. So let's get out of here and play some shit. You guys all know the social media handles, the network, Signing Wizards Network, Dark Satellite Media. And of course the Rant EM Radio and Patreon Pro Wrestling Tees. You know the deal. Any closing thoughts, Chop? Anything?
If you're still not to the fans, if you're still not sure about Strong Style, do yourselves a favor and watch the match that we saw tonight.
I posted it.
And just give it a watch. It's really, really good. It's not everyone's cup of tea, but it's something that you should watch. It's totally different from what you see on TV now, and it's very, very good.
And like I said, put your comments up there. See what likes, dislikes. Like if anything we missed, like please, like I think there's one thing that's like we always say about the show, like the user, the listener, I should say, the listener friendly. Like we love that kind of interaction. Because it makes sense. Like, that's what something we can work on. Like, oh, shit, I didn't even see this.
Correct.
I can't stress how great this was. So we'll see you guys next week. Same bad time, same bad channel.
Yep.
Be cool. Be nice. Be nice to people. Stay safe, please. Don't be a jerk off. I'm done. You guys done?
I'm done.
We'll see you guys next week. Say goodnight, Gracie.
Goodnight, Gracie.